Yeah, we were, we're now, of course, in the period of Svi Asaimu. And the mitzvah of Svi Asaimu is actually in this week's Chami Parsha, Parsha Semor, where the Torah says, Usvartim lachem mimachras haShabbos, right? Actually, if you count Svi, you say it every day. You should count from the day after Shabbos. That's what it says. Miyom haviyachem es oimer hatnufa. From the day that you bring the korban oimer, that's a barley offering. Sheva shabbosos tamimos tihiyena, for 7 complete weeks. So we know, if you learn the Mishnah, we find that there was a very big machlekes during the Bayis Sheni between the Tzdukim and the Prushim. The Tzdukim were a sect that they were Jewish, but they did, the Sadducees, they did not believe in the Torah Shebal Peh. They interpreted the Torah very literally, and they did not accept Chazal. So consequently, they interpreted Mimacharas HaShabbos not to mean the day after Pesach, the second day of Pesach, but they interpreted it to mean that Sunday, in other words, the day after Shabbos, meaning to say, whatever day Pesach was, you simply waited until the first Shabbos within Pesach, let's say it's Chol HaMoed, and they would start counting the Omer, they believed, from Sunday, Motzei Shabbos. They interpreted Mimacharas HaShabbos in a very literal way, the day after a Shabbos. We know that the Chachamim went to very great lengths to disprove that interpretation, and they interpret Mimacharas HaShabbos, that Shabbos in that Pasuk does not refer to Saturday, which would make Macharas HaShabbos Sunday, but rather Shabbos refers to the Yom Tov of Pesach. You should count from the day after the Yom Tov of Pesach, right? So the Yom Tov of Pesach is the first day. The Omer is brought the second day. The counting of the Omer begins from the second day of Pesach. Now granted, we begin the night before, but that's because the night before is the second day of Pesach. So in other words, the machlokes between the Tzdukim and the Prushim, Prushim are the Pharisees, the Chachamim, is whether the word Shabbos in that Pesach refers to Shabbos, which you might think is logical, or Shabbos in that Pasuk refers to Yom Tov, which is the way we actually Paskin. By the way, the Machlokas Rishonim, if Svira Bisman Hazeh is a Torah commandment or a Rabbinic commandment, is simply this. Most Rishonim say that the mitzvah of counting the Omer today is only Midrabanan, because the Torah describes the mitzvah as commencing from the day you bring the barley sacrifice. Since Bisman Hazeh, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we don't have a barley sacrifice, we don't have an Omer, so the mitzvah of counting the Omer is only Midrabanan Bisman Hazeh, because it is called a Zecher LeMikdash, to remind ourselves of what existed when there was a Beis HaMikdash. The Rambam is a Das Yachid, the Rambam's opinion is that the mitzvah of counting the Omer, even Bisman Hazeh, is a Da'oraisa. And even though the Torah says you start counting from the day you bring the Omer, that is only telling you the day that you begin to count. It does not mean to say that you actually have to bring the Omer. Either way, whether Svira is a Doraisa or a Drabanan, which is a Machlokas, the Rambam and other Rishonim, it is not an obligation on women, because it is a mitzvah saseh shazman grama. It is a positive commandment that is bound in time, and it's not one of the many exceptions, so women are actually peturos from the technical mitzvah of Svira, although, like any other mitzvah saseh shazman grama, if a person wants to do it voluntarily, you get schar for doing so, you get reward for doing so, and you can make a bracha. But be it as it may, the question that the Mefarshim ask is the following. If, in fact, the meaning of Mimacharas HaShabbos means the day after the Yom Tov of Pesach, meaning the day after the first day of Pesach, the second day of Pesach, and the word Shabbos does not mean Shabbos, but the word Shabbos means Yom Tov, then why does the Torah say Mimacharas HaShabbos? Why doesn't it say a more clear language, Mimacharas HaPesach? You should start counting the day after Pesach. Now again, the day after Pesach wouldn't mean after the 7 days, but it means the day after the first day of Pesach. Why does it use a lashon mirachalas haShabbos, which is so ambiguous? So the truth is, the Eben Ezra actually suggests an answer this way. The Eben Ezra says that, you know, if it would have said mimachalas haPesach, that would have been ambiguous. Why is that so? Because Pesach often refers to the Korban Pesach. Now, when did they bring the Korban Pesach? They actually brought the Korban Pesach on the 14th of Nisan, Erev Pesach. So if you were to say you start counting the Omer the day after Pesach, you might have thought that that meant you start counting the Omer the day after they brought the Korban Pesach. Now, what's the day after they brought the Korban Pesach? The first day of Pesach. So you would have started counting Sfira the first day of Pesach, because that's the day after the Korban Pesach. By saying the words Shabbos, Shabbos means you refrain from work, that tells me you start counting it the day after the Yom Tov of Pesach, because only Yom Tov could be referred to as a Shabbos, because you have to refrain from doing certain work. That's what the Eben Ezra said. The Eben Ezra suggests that Mimachalas HaPesach could have induced you to start counting the Omer the first day of Pesach, because that is the day after the bringing of the Korban Pesach. Therefore, it uses the word Shabbos. But the truth is, the Eben Ezra's answer is a little difficult. Because if it is true that Mimachalas HaPesach is ambiguous, it is equally true Mimachalas HaShabbos is ambiguous. Meaning to say, Mimachalas HaPesach, you might have made a mistake. Well, Mimachalas HaShabbos, you might make the mistake of the Tztukim, that the Tztukim said that Brachas HaShabbos meant Sunday. So it's not really clear that you're gaining something by substituting Mimachalas HaShabbos instead of Mimachalas HaPesach. If Mimachalas HaPesach could have led you to a wrong answer, Mimachalas HaShabbos could also lead you to a wrong answer. You see? So what could the Torah have done to eliminate any confusion? It's not clear, but it could have said perhaps Usfartem Lachem Mimacharas Chag HaMatzos or something, in which you would have known it's clearly the first day of Pesach. So that's one question I want to explore, and that is, why does the Torah take the unusual step of referring to the first day of Pesach as Shabbos? If in fact Mimachalas HaShabbos does not mean the day after Shabbos, but it means the day after Pesach, which starts from the night before, then why call Yom Tov Shabbos? There's Shabbos and there's Yom Tov. They're two separate things. That's one question. A second question that is kedai to think about is, the Torah emphasizes that you commence the period of Svira the day after the Shabbos, which means the Yom Tov, the day after. Why is it Mimacharas? Why do we start counting the second day of Pesach? Why don't we start counting on Pesach itself? After all, if the idea of Svira is to connect, as we've said many times already, to connect the holiday of freedom, the Zman Cheruseinu, with the idea of Kabbalah Satorah, because it's teaching us that freedom without Kabbalah Satorah is not good, not a good thing, it's a destructive thing, then shouldn't that message start the first night of Pesach? Why is it B'davka Mimacharas HaPesach? Mimacharas HaShabbos, which means Mimacharas HaPesach. Why the day after? Why the second day? Why not the first day? Well, Lagabi, the second question, the Sefer HaChinuch gives an answer. And the Sefer HaChinuch wants to suggest the following. You know, there is a halacha that says we don't make weddings on Chol HaMoed. We don't make weddings on Yom Tov or Chol HaMoed. And why is that so? Because we have a rule, it's a halacha, Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha. We don't want to mix different types of joy. We don't, because the point is this. When you focus on a joy of mitzvah, that should be your total focus. You shouldn't be doing other things. So you might say, well, if I make a chasna during Chol HaMoed, I have a double joy. I have Yom Tov and I have a chasna. The answer is no, because if your mind is on the chasna, then some of your joy is not from Yom Tov. Or if your mind is on Yom Tov, Some of your joy is not for the chasna. So we say, Ein ma'arvin simcha b'simcha. Each joy should be complete and savored on its own. Mimela, the Sefer HaChinuch wants to say, since the first night of Pesach is a celebration of Yetzias Mitzrayim, you don't want to take away from it by already starting your countdown to a different Yom Tov. It's like, oh, I'm so happy it's Pesach because now we're going to Shavuos. The first night of Pesach should be totally focused on Yetzias Mitzrayim, and therefore Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha. And it's only the second day. And if, again, in Golis we're a little mixed up because we conduct the second Seder and we count the Omer. But in the ideal calendar of Eretz Yisrael, which is the real calendar, so to speak, the second night of Pesach is already Chol HaMoed. You're no longer, as it were, involved in the intensity of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So then the Sefer HaChinuch says, you start talking about the new Yom Tov. This is the Sefer HaChinuch's answer of why Svira is Mimacharas HaShabbos and not on the first day. However, I think we have to say once again that I think this is a bit of a difficult answer to understand, because it's not like Shavuos and Pesach are two different things, like a marriage and Yom Tov. Rather, Matan Torah is what gives meaning to Pesach. So shouldn't I be thinking about that during Pesach itself, during the Seder itself? It's not like two different simchas. First of all, if it would be two different simchas, really, if you took it literally, you shouldn't even count Sfira during Chol HaMoed, because Chol HaMoed also is Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha. So you see, just like you don't get married Chol HaMoed, so clearly it's not that same thing. But then there's another teretz the Zohar gives. The Zohar gives a very interesting answer. The Zohar says that we find in Chazal that Matan Torah is compared to a chasana between Hashem and the Jewish people. That when it says Yom Chasunaso, the day of the marriage of Shlomo in Shir HaShirim, and Shlomo is a kinoi for Hashem, Melech Shah Shalom Shalom, the king who is the source of all peace. So the chasana of Shlomo, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is said to be the day of Matan Torah. In fact, it's even brought down in Halacha that many of the minhagim that we do at a chasana are to be a zecher to what happened at Matan Torah when Hashem married the Jewish people. Why are there candles when the parents walk the children down the aisle? Because at Matan Torah there was lightning. Why do people talk during the chuppah? Because it says in Matan Torah there were kolos. Maybe that's why they do it. A lot of voices. I don't know. Okay, no, that's not a proper minute to emulate. All right. So that's the concept that it's a day of Matan. It's a day of Matan Torah. Even the fact that the Chasna and the Kala fast because it's like a Yom Kippur is connected to Matan Torah, because on Yom Kippur Moshe Rabbeinu brought down the second Luchos. So you're combining both days of Matan Torah. Among Svardim, they have a very beautiful, interesting minhag on Shavuos that, you know, we read before Torah reading, the first day of Shavuos, we read a poem called Akdamas, which is an Aramaic poem. They read a kesuvah. It's a nusach of a kesuvah, like you have at a wedding. I, the chasan, promise to the kala. But they read it as if Hashem, I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, take, you know, you take the whole nusach of the kesuvah, and it's written as HaKadosh Baruch Hu taking Bnei Israel as a kala. This is what the Zohar says, and basically, I mean, many midrashim say this, that Matan Torah is the chasana between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. The Zohar takes this one step further. The Zohar says the 7 weeks of the Omer, which are a preparation for Matan Torah, are like the 7 days of Nida, the 7 days of separation, that before a kala could be reunited with the chasana, there's a period of separation, of Nida, the 7 clean days. And the 7 clean days corresponds to a week. Each week of Svira is connected one of the Zayin Nekiyim. But the first day of Pesach can't count because we began the first day of Pesach in Mitzrayim. We began in a state of impurity. And therefore, the first day of Pesach is like the Hefsek Tahara. That's the day that we separated from the tumor. That's the day we stopped bleeding, as it were. And just as the halakha is very clear that the day of Hepsiptara cannot count as one of your seven clean days, the seven clean days has to begin after the Hepsiptara. So the Zohar says very beautifully that this is why the counting of the Omer, which is the Zion Nekiyim, specifically begins the day after Pesach. Pesach is the day of the Hepsiptara because we began that day, that night. We still began in a state of Tumah. We were still in Mitzrayim. We were still Meshuka, because until Makas Pechoros, we were not in a state of separation from the Tumah of Mitzrayim. Like I said, that someone has said, this might even be a little bit of a remez of why we don't make weddings during Sfira. Not only because of the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, which is the main reason, but it might be that since the period of the Omer is a remez to the seven clean days that a Nidah requires, so our minhag is we separate. And again, it's not a strong reason. If that would be so, then even husbands and wives should be separated, and yet obviously there's no such halacha. So that's kind of a good answer of why it's mimacharas, the day after. But it doesn't, we still haven't answered our first question. Our first question is, okay, that's why it's the day after. But why is the Yom Tov of Pesach referred to as Shabbos? Shabbos is not Yom Tov. Yom Tov is not Shabbos. Right? Why refer to it as Shabbos, particularly when we see that the Tzdukim consistently, either intentionally or unintentionally, misinterpreted this to mean, you know, Shabbos is Shabbos and Mocharas is Sunday. By the way, someone has said that why, and we found this was a very popular misconception. Many people followed the Tzdukim. Like, why was the Tzdukim such a popular teaching? Like, you know, what's the big deal? They did a lot of things which were distortions that people didn't follow, but this episode people followed. People were very attracted to this. So actually, some want to suggest there was a political reason why. Because if you start counting the Omer on Sunday, okay, that means Shavuos will always be on Sunday. Is that correct? Because 49 days, in other words, 49 days ends, right, 7 weeks, always ends, they're an exact week. So if you go from Sunday, 49 days to Saturday, your Shavuos is going to be Saturday and that's Sunday. So they like that, because Shavuos in Eretz Yisrael is a bit of a hard Yom Tov, because it's you only have one day, and there's no Chol HaMoed. So people have to go back to work the day after Shavuos. So the Tzdukim gave them a two-day vacation. They always had a Shabbos and a Yom Tov. So this was a popular, for the average working person who was not a Talmud Chacham, they liked the Tzdukim's interpretation because it always gave you a two-day Yom Tov on Shavuos, or Shabbos on a Yom Tov. So actually some of Forshim say this is why the Tzdukim was such an attractive thing, that the Chacham had to go to very great lengths to dispel and show people that that was not Emes. It's like we have in the United States, right? When I was growing up, you know, we used to celebrate, you know, Lincoln's birthday when Lincoln was born, February 12th, and Washington. And now everything is, you know, you move around somebody's birthday, they get it together with a weekend and everything else, right? So that was the same thing the Tzdukim were trying to do. So the question then becomes, whatever the reason, L'chaira, Shabbos is Shabbos, not Yom Tov, and yet in that pasuk it means Yom Tov. Why is that so? So there's a beautiful answer the Meshech Chachma gives. And the Meshech Chachma says, let's look for a moment at the differences between Yom Tov and Shabbos. There are two fundamental distinctions between the holiness of Yom Tov and the holiness of Shabbos, and both of them derive from a common reason. One difference, of course, is in the scope of what you're allowed to do on Yom Tov versus what you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, and that is to say, both on Shabbos and Yom Tov, there are Isurei Melacha. You cannot do the 39 Melachas, but the big exception is that on Yom Tov, you're allowed to do the Melachas that are necessary for food preparation. So you're allowed to cook, you're allowed to light fires if they're from existing fires. You don't make a new fire, but you know, you can raise and lower flames, etc. You can light candles. And not only that, for reasons which are a bit complicated, and hopefully you do have a share in Hilchos Yom Tov, you can even do things which are not directly for food preparation, as long as they enhance your joy of Yom Tov. So for example, I'm allowed to carry on Yom Tov not only food, I can carry anything I need for Yom Tov. I can carry Sfarim, I can carry all sorts of things. I can light a candle not only for cooking, but I can light a candle to have candles, right? So it's not only for food preparation, but essentially, Yom Tov, the melachos are permitted if it is to enhance the joy of Yom Tov by either food or by other things that are considered to be Yom Tov needs, right? So collectively, the term that is used to describe that is ochel nefesh, which literally means food for the soul, but as I say, it's lav dafka food, it encompasses all sorts of Yom Tov needs as well. Of course, it's important to recognize that even when melachos are permitted, they can only be done for the Yom Tov needs, right? That's why you're not allowed to cook on Yom Tov for a weekday. You can't even cook from one day of Yom Tov to another day of Yom Tov. And you're not even allowed to cook from Yom Tov to a Shabbos unless you've done what is called an Erev Tefillah. So there are a lot of restrictions. You're also not allowed to cook food for non-Jews, which is a very, because of this we have a very interesting halacha. You're allowed to invite a non-Jewish person to your meal on Shabbos, but you're not allowed to invite a non-Jewish person to your meal on Yom Tov. What's the difference? Because on Shabbos, where you know you're not allowed to cook for anybody, so if you invite a non-Jew, we're not afraid you're going to do extra cooking for them. On Yom Tov, you are allowed to cook for the Jews, so you might inadvertently cook extra food specially for the non-Jew, which is forbidden. So the Chachamim made a gezeirah. In other words, the Torah says you're not allowed to cook for a non-Jew. That's a Torah law. The Rabbanan said, therefore, even if you're not doing extra cooking, you're not even allowed to invite a non-Jew to a Yom Tov meal. We don't mean Cholamar, we're talking about a Yom Tov. Lest you inadvertently cook extra food. This creates, by the way, many, many difficulties, which unfortunately almost all families have one way or the other. You might say, well, I wasn't planning on inviting, you know, the couple down the street to my seder. Well, that's fine. But, you know, unfortunately, many people have families in which there are people who are intermarried. Now, this is part of a much more broader question. How do you relate to a Jew that's married to a gay? In whichever way. Do you have connection with them? Don't you have connection with them? These are shaylos that one needs to discuss, you know, with their rabbi, their spiritual advisor. But many will say that it's important to try to have a connection, at least for the Jewish person, in order to keep them, him or her, connected to Yiddishkeit. Now, one of the ways you often forge that connection is by inviting people to a seder or to a Yom Tov meal. The question is, the person won't come unless you include the non-Jewish person. Now, as I say, on Shabbos, there would be no particular issue of doing that, but then you'd have to make a general cheshvan that I want to do that. I mean, it's a shayla anyway. But when it comes to Yom Tov, it's a serious halachic shayla. Are you allowed to invite a Jew to the Seder if, or any Yom Tov meal, if that Jew will insist that a non-Jewish person come along? Right? It's a difficult shayla, and it's very, very hard to find a basis to be matur, although depending on the situation, there might be various heterim. If everything was pre-cooked and no cooking is going to be done on Yom Tov at all, etc., there might be types of heterim. Yeah?
What about in the case of someone who's working for the
viewers? Yeah, well, that perhaps is even a better question. Because certainly you want the person to experience all of the different things, but once again, I think it would be very difficult to invite him for Yom Tov. So, what do you do? What do you do to a candidate for Davis? He's not even going to see a Seder, what's going to go on? So, what I would recommend is you do a mock Seder some other day during Chol HaMoed. You make a third Seder, without brachos, of course, just so he sees what it's like. You know, it's not the real thing. But there's some very serious shaylos about it. Yeah.
Is that the same like a Rosh Hashanah, where you have people in shul who
are maybe
potentially Jews, but
Well, let me explain this. In other words, if you don't know, if somebody's in shul, you don't know if they're Jewish or not Jewish.
Even if you were told ahead of time.
That they're not Jewish? It's the same problem. There is a serious shaylos.
Right? Yeah. If it's off cloak, you're not going to be doing anything.
Depending on the circumstance, if the invitation was already extended, and if you'd be forced to withdraw it, it would create embarrassment on their part. you could be somach on it. On the other hand, I would not encourage people to lechatchila invite a non-Jew.
But someone asks you.
Someone asking me, the middle person or the actual non-Jew?
Someone in the shul, where you have this person, they're not Jewish right now, they may become Jewish.
And the person's already in the shul?
The person's definitely coming to the shul.
So if you say no, they'll get somebody else.
Sure.
I think in that case, if everything is pre-cooked, it would be all right. But as I say, these are bidyevets. These are bidyevets. These are not situations that you should invite. And again, some people have the opposite idea. Some people have the idea, let's have all the goyim, come and see great things. They actually look at it as a positive thing. One should realize that even if they're heterim, and they might be heterim, it's not a lechatchila type of thing that one does. On the other hand, Shabbos, see, it's a paradox. We might have thought Shabbos should be less after that, and yet Shabbos, there's it's much more all right than it is for Yom Tov. No, okay. All right, so one chiluk between Shabbos and Yom Tov is, of course, that on Yom Tov, the malachos of Ochel Nefesh are permitted, and on Shabbos, the malachos of Ochel Nefesh are forbidden, right? That's the obvious difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov. That's chiluk number one. Chiluk number two is the nature of the holiness of Shabbos and Yom Tov. The holiness of Shabbos is automatic. It does not depend on whether we do something or we don't do something. The seventh day of creation was sanctified by HaKadosh Baruch Hu from the very beginning of the creation of the universe. It does not depend on the Jewish people, although the Jewish people, as it were, are those who keep Shabbos. But even if, chas v'shalom, there would not be a single Jew in the world, even if there would not be a single Shomer Shabbos in the world, the holiness of Shabbos would permeate the Bria. Shabbos is sanctified by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shabbos is kept by the Jewish people. But the Kedushas Shabbos does not come from us. The Kedushas Shabbos comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When we look at Yom Tov, we see a very, very different situation. Now, this will be strange to us because we don't have the Sanhedrin today. But the holiness of Yom Tov depends on when the Sanhedrin sanctified Rosh Chodesh. Right? What is Pesach? The 15th day after Rosh Chodesh Nisan. But who proclaims it Rosh Chodesh? The Sanhedrin in Yerushalayim, based on witnesses who saw the new moon. And you know what the Rambam says? The Rambam writes, this is an amazing thing, the only reason we have Yomim Tovim today is because the last Sanhedrin, which was under the leadership of Hillel Hasheni, this was the great-grandson of Hillel, the famous Hillel, calculated all of the Rosh Chodeshes till the year 6000, and they sanctified those Rosh Chodeshes in advance. And that is why we have Yom Tov today. Meaning Yom Tov is not based on an astronomical day. Even, in fact, the Mishnah tells us, even if the Sanhedrin made Rosh Chodesh the wrong day, even if they made Rosh Chodesh the wrong day, the Yomim Tovim are counted from the day that they designated. This was the famous story with Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua, where Rabbi Gamliel, the head of the Sanhedrin, proclaimed a certain day to be Rosh Hashanah, and Rabbi Yeshua felt it would be a day later. So according to him, Yom Kippur would be a day later. And Rabbi Gamliel ordered the great Rabbi Yeshua to come to him on the day that Rabbi Yeshua thought would be Yom Kippur, that's the day afterwards, carrying his money and doing malacha. And Rabbi Yeshua did so because Rabbi Akiva told him, even if the Sanhedrin has the wrong day, their calculation is accepted by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Rambam writes that if there wouldn't have been a Kiddush HaChodesh by the Sanhedrin for the future Rosh HaChodeshim, we would not have to keep Yom Tov today. We don't keep Yom Tov because astronomically there's Rosh Chodesh and we count 15 days. We keep Yom Tov only because of the Kiddush HaChodesh of Beis Din. Meaning, unlike the holiness of Shabbos, which does not depend on us, The holiness of Yom Tov comes only because of the action of Klal Yisrael in being Mekadesh Hizman. And that's why the Mefarshim say the Nusach of a Bracha is different on Shabbos and Yom Tov. On Shabbos we say Baruch Atah Hashem, blessed art you Hashem, Mekadesh, who sanctifies Shabbos. But what do we say by Yom Tov? Baruch Atah Hashem, Mekadesh Yisrael Fahazmanim. What does that mean? You don't sanctify the Yom Tov. You sanctify the people of Israel, who then are given the koach to sanctify Zman. This is one of the reasons, by the way, in the story of Hanukkah, why when the Greeks were trying to take away mitzvos, one of the mitzvos they attacked so much was Rosh Chodesh. What's so great about Rosh Chodesh? I mean, we don't do that much in Rosh Chodesh. The answer is no. Rosh Chodesh is the phenomenal power that Hashem gave to the Jewish people to bring Kedusha into Zman. That we have this power over time. And that's a symbol that, you know, time is master over everything. Everything is subject to time. Everything disintegrates. Everything falls apart. Everything, as it were, is subservient to time. But the Jewish people are above time because they designate what time is holy, what time is not holy. And in effect, to be above time is to be above nature. And the Greeks could not understand how anything could be above nature, because they saw in nature the greatest perfection. And that's why the Bris Milah is on the eighth day. Again, the Maral says, we always have to get in there, Maral says that the number seven represents the natural world, because the natural world was made in 6 days and Shabbos is the completion. Number eight is the level that's above the limitations of nature. And that is why Milah is the eighth day. But that's also and again, what did the Yevanim want to take away? They wanted to take away Bris Milah. They wanted to take away Rosh Chodesh, because Rosh Chodesh is we're above nature in terms of time. And they also wanted to take away Shabbos, because Shabbos is the acknowledgement that Hashem is the master of the universe. That's a more general idea of being the foundation of the Torah. So we have two chilukim between Shabbos and Yom Tov. One is the chiluk that on Shabbos you cannot do malacha for food preparation, and on Yom Tov you can. And the second chiluk is that the holiness of Shabbos comes from God, and the holiness of Yom Tov is our partnership with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in sanctifying Zman.
So, when we sanctify Zman, does like Hashem meet us halfway, and then
right,
a special
prayer
comes into the world?
Hashem waits to see what we do. When we do it, then the gates of Shemayim are open, and the Kedusha comes into the world.
So does it open for all of Klal Yisrael, or does it only open for those who...
No, well the Sanhedrin are the representatives of Klal Yisrael, so by their action, Hashem opens up the Kedusha and suffuses it into the world. In fact, it's very interesting, just to give you
suppose Chas V'Shalom, let's say that no Jew, or let's say that only one Jew in the world is observing Yom Tov.
No, but again, keep in mind the Rambam's point. The Rambam's point is not that the holiness comes into being because we observe Yom Tov. Rather, the holiness came into being because the Sanhedrin, 2,000 years ago, have already established the dates. So every time their date comes, Hashem opens up. So it does not depend. Right, it does not depend on us now, so to speak. But in a more general level, it did depend on Klal Yisrael being Mekadesh. That's correct. So even if there's no Jew who keeps Yom Tov, that would not be Nogeya. By the way, I think it's brought down that one of the reasons why Mashiach must come by the year 6000 is because the calendar has only been sanctified till the year 6000. Meaning, in the year 6001, unless we have a new Sanhedrin, all the Yamim Tovim are going to lapse. And since we have a Masorah that Hashem will not allow the Torah to totally terminate, the Hechrich Mashiach will have to come. Now you may ask, well gee, but isn't there another Chazal that say that when Mashiach comes all the Yamim Tovim will be nullified except for Purim? Well, again, there are many, many explanations, but the one common denominator is that the Yamim Tovim will be kept. It does not mean you're not going to have to keep Pesach. So that song, there's that song, Pesach Blues, that says, I'll do my job until Mashiach comes, which is trying to imply that when Mashiach comes, you're off the hook. We shouldn't talk about Yom Tov that way. It's not emes, but Baruch Hashem, we will be zocha to celebrate Yetzias Mitzrayim even when Mashiach comes. But rather, what it means, what Chazal means that Purim is unique is, because the maila of Purim is that you see Hashem even in the everyday. And when Mashiach comes, we will have a heightened awareness where we don't have to see Hashem in the supernatural. We will see the Yad Hashem in the ordinary. That's what it means. That the lesson of all the Yamim Tovim will be less necessary because we will see Hashem in the normal, everyday life.
Jewish people wouldn't observe
that.
You had mentioned before, I think, that there was a certain cost that Hashem puts
that's right.
into that.
That's right. 100%. But no, yes. But Hashem releases it based on when we proclaimed it to we, meaning the Sanhedrin. That's the difference. The Koach of Shabbos never depended on anything we did. The Koach of Yom Tov was a function of us. And if we proclaim the wrong day, Hashem holds it up and releases it based on when we proclaim it. Okay? That's what I mean. So of course Hashem releases the Kedusha. But Hashem waits to see what day we proclaim it. You see? Yeah.
So how can you proclaim the day when you said Rule's grandson?
Yeah.
How can you
before it's here?
Yeah, you talk about the moon, the month that disappears.
It's a very good question. In other words, the question is, can you proclaim like the next, can the Sanhedrin, I mean you could figure it out b'cheshvan, but can you be Makadesh? Can you sanctify, right? Could Hillel 1500 years ago, more than 2000 years ago, sanctify Reish Chodesh for the years Tavshin Samach and Tavshin Samach Aleph and 100 years now? I mean, but can't you, in other words, can't you only sanctify a new moon when you have a new moon? Can you do it ahead of time? That's a discussion that the Mufreshim discuss. All I could say is that the Rambam says yes. The Rambam says you could figure out the Reshei Chadashim in advance and you could proclaim them in advance even though the moon, that particular cycle is not going to be evident for hundreds and hundreds of years. A whole list of Reshei Chadashim in advance that is sanctified. Yep, that's what the Rambam says. By the way, I should emphasize that it's a very interesting speculation. That is, writers on the Jewish calendar have said that, you know, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the new moon was sanctified by witnesses saying we saw the new sliver of the moon. Hillel was Makadosh based on astronomical calculations. It turns out, therefore, that on the average, our Rosh Chodesh is a day or so earlier than would have been the Rosh Chodesh in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, because generally speaking, the moon is not immediately visible for a few hours afterwards. So therefore, since Hillel sanctified based on the astronomy of the beginning of a new moon, but when there was a Sanhedrin, it would have been based on visual observation, so our Rosh Chodesh is a day or two earlier. But again, that doesn't make a difference, because Rosh Chodesh is whenever the Sanhedrin proclaims it. In those days, they would proclaim it based on witnesses. Hillel proclaimed it based on astronomy. You could have done either way. So it's interesting, therefore, that our Yamim Tovim are slightly earlier than the Yamim Tovim that would have been observed in the time of the Bayis Sheni. But again, that's no problem, because that is also a function of the Kedusha of the Sanhedrin that was Mekadesh Rosh Chodesh. It's a very complicated Mekseya. Okay, now we've identified these two distinctions between Shabbos and Yom Tov. Now these two distinctions emanate from a common points. And the common point is, you know, when Chazal describes Shabbos, they say the following. Hashem says to Bnei Yisrael, Matana achas yeshli bebeis genezai, I have a precious gift in my treasure house. It's called the Matana. The Shabbos Shema. Shabbos is her name. And I want to give you the gift of Shabbos. Shabbos is called the Matana. That's why we say in the Shachris of Shabbos morning, Yismach Moshe b'matnas chelko. Moshe should rejoice in the gift that he gave us. Now why is Shabbos called the Matana? Because the truth of the matter is, what is a gift? A gift is something that somebody didn't deserve, somebody didn't earn, somebody's not entitled to. A gift is a freebie. Shabbos is a freebie. Because if you think about it, there's no reason why Shabbos should only be given to the Jewish people. What does Shabbos commemorate? Shabbos commemorates the fact that Hashem made the world in 6 days and he rested on Shabbos. Shabbos is a universal idea. Shabbos should not be only a Jewish idea. Every person in the world is mechuyev. A guy and a Jew is mechuyev to be makir that Hashem made the heaven and the earth and rested on Shabbos. So the reason Shabbos is called the Matana is it's a freebie that was given to us, because by logical rights it should have been given equally to all the Umos HaOlam. And yet, what does the halacha say? The halacha actually says the opposite. Although I mentioned before, you could invite a goy to your Shabbos meal, but you know there is a halacha. Not only is a goy not obligated to keep Shabbos, a goy is not even supposed to keep Shabbos. And that even means that when a goy is a candidate for conversion, and he or she is getting used to keeping Shabbos, they are obligated to do one wrong thing on Shabbos. They have to turn on one light. Why? Goy sheshavas, if a goy tries to keep Shabbos totally, chayav misa, the goy deserves that, because Shabbos was given only to the Jewish people. Of course, I would suggest that given the fact that probably, Bava Nesein HaRabim, even we probably do something wrong every Shabbos. So, you know, it's not, how likely is it that the guy will have kept Shabbos 100%? It's not that likely. Miss Tama, he would be Mechayel Shabbos anyway. But just to be sure, you would tell him, turn on a light, just to be sure. In fact, they even ask Akasha, how could Avraham Avinu keep the whole Torah before it was given? Until Matan Torah, he had a status of a Ben Melech. He was not yet uniquely Jewish. He wouldn't be allowed to keep Shabbos. So some say he wore tzitzis. Because for a goy to wear tzitzis on Shabbos would be carrying, because it's not an acceptable garment. For a Jew, it wouldn't be. So that's another source. A goy can wear tzitzis on Shabbos. That would be called carrying. Of course, if there's an erev, that doesn't help you. But if there's no erev and he walks outside with tzitzis, from a goy's perspective, that would be the malacha of carrying without an erev. Okay. So the point is this. Shabbos is called a gift, because Shabbos is not really something that should have belonged to us. Shabbos should have belonged to the world. But Hashem gave us a special gift. And that actually explains, Mashenken Yomtov. Mashenken Yomtov. Yomtov clearly belongs to us. Because what does Yomtov commemorate? Yomtov commemorates not the universal thing that Hashem created the world. Yom Tov commemorates the special and unique historical relationship that we have with Hashem. Pesach commemorates Yetzias Mitzrayim. Shavuos commemorates Matan Torah. Sukkos is the Anani HaKavod, the special clouds of glory. So the Meshech Chachma says, Shabbos is called the Matana, because it's not anything that is really having to do with us. It's just a gift that Hashem gave us, which makes it that precious. Yom Tov, however, is specifically connected to us because it commemorates the unique relationship that Hashem has with Bnei Yisrael. The only question I have in that is, I have a question about Rosh Hashanah in that sense, because Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, unique connection to the Jewish people. Even Yom Kippur is the unique connection, is the unique connection to the Jewish people, because Yom Kippur is the day that Moshe Rabbeinu came down with the second Luchos to show that Hashem has forgiven us for the chait ha'egel. It's a little hard to identify what is uniquely Jewish about the holiday of Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is the Yom HaDin, but it's the Yom HaDin for the whole world. The whole world gets judged on Rosh Hashanah. So it would appear if we celebrate by Shofar and we celebrate by our special Yom Tov, it would appear that Rosh Hashanah is a bit like Shabbos. So I don't have a clear answer. And there's the Meshech Chacham was trying to say, only Shabbos is a gift. Yom Tov is not a gift. Shabbos is a gift because the idea of Shabbos is not something that is specially shayach to Bnei Israel. It's shayach to the whole world. But Hashem gave us the joy and privilege of Shabbos. Yom Tov, he says, is not a freebie in that sense, because Yom explains the two differences in Shabbos and Yom Tov. Meaning like this. Since Shabbos does not commemorate an idea that is unique to the Jewish people, that's why we're not the ones that create the Kedusha of Shabbos. Shabbos doesn't depend on me. It's an idea that's above me. Similarly, I can't violate Shabbos for my needs, my food preparation, because the idea of Shabbos is not based on anything that happened to me. Yom Tov, however, since Yom Tov is a celebration very specifically of the unique relationship Hashem has with the Jewish people, it therefore follows, number one, Yom Tov will be batel to my needs. Meaning, Yom Tov serves me. Yom Tov is a celebration of my connection with Hashem. So Yom Tov, as it were, bends when it is necessary for my food preparation, for my Simchas Yom Tov, and the like. And that also explains why the holiness of Yom Tov depends on the actions of the Jewish people, as opposed to Shabbos, because Yom Tov comes from the holiness of the Jewish people. Right, so we have these two differences between Shabbos and Yom Tov. One is the scope of Malacha, the other is the source of the sanctity. But both of those differences derive from the fact that Shabbos represents a transcendent idea that does not depend on us, which is why it's called a Matana, while Yom Tov depends on us. In other words, if there wouldn't be a Jewish people, there couldn't be a Yom Tov. If there wouldn't be a Jewish people, there would still be a Shabbos. And therefore, in fact, that's why Shabbos is not subservient to the Jewish people, and Yom Tov is, in both respects. Yeah.
And where do you place
Yom Kippur? Well, that's what I said. Yom Kippur is actually similar to the Yom Tov paradigm, because Yom Kippur is also a celebration of the unique connection that Hashem has with the Jewish people. Yom Kippur is the day that Hashem forgave the Jewish people because of the Egel Hazav. It's the day of the second Luchos. It's the day of Matan Torah also. Shavuos was the first Luchos. Yom Kippur was the second Luchos. As I say, Yom Kippur does fit on the Yom Tov side of things. Although Yom Kippur, you're asking Yom Kippur that was like Shabbos in that sense. Yeah, Yom Kippur is unusual because Yom Kippur has one aspect of Shabbos that you can't do melacha, but it still depends on our sanctification of time. So presumably the way we understand it is the following. The reason why Yom Kippur doesn't bend, as it were, is simply because part of the way we do tshuva is to make ourselves like angels who don't need the physical. So it's a different point. In other words, it's like this. The reason why work is forbidden on Yom Kippur may not be the same reason why work is forbidden on Shabbos. Work is forbidden on Shabbos to show that Hashem is over us. Work is forbidden on Yom Kippur because we try to take ourselves out of the physical world. So it's a different dynamic. Okay, so with this structure, the Meshech Chachma wants to say the following. We've differentiated Shabbos, which is a gift, from Yom Tov. But in a sense, the Meshech Chachma wants to say, Pesach resembles certain aspects of Shabbos. And that is the following. If the idea of Shabbos is something was given to us that we didn't earn and we didn't deserve, that's what Shabbos is. Shabbos is not a Jewish thing. It's a universal thing. Then Pesach, although Pesach is uniquely Jewish, that's true, but Pesach also represents the notion of what's called a matnas chinam, a gift that we didn't earn and we didn't deserve. How is that? Because we know that the Jewish people should have been in Mitzrayim 400 years. Hashem took us out 190 years early. We were on the 49th level of Tuma. We were not deserving of redemption. But Hashem in His love gave us a mitzvah of Pesach and Mila. And He remembered the schus of the Avos, the merit of the Avos and the Imahos. That's why it says in Shir HaShirim, Mekapetz, Medaleg al Harim, He jumped over the mountains. Hashem accelerated the redemption in the merit of the mountains that are the patriarchs. Mekapetz al Agvos, He jumped over the hills. It means He skipped over the 400 years in the merit of the matriarchs, the Gvos. So just as Shabbos is that which was given to us, even though we didn't earn it, the redemption of Pesach, although halachically it's a Yom Tov, partakes of the nature of Shabbos because it is a matnas chinam that we didn't deserve and we didn't earn. And the Meshech Chachma says that is why Pesach can be referred to Shabbos. Unlike Shavuos, which we earned by the Avodah of Sviras HaOmer, and even the Anane HaKavod, which we gained back through our tshuva after Yom Kippur, Pesach is a matnas chinam, an unearned gift. Now here is the interesting thing. So this is his answer, why Pesach is referred to as Shabbos. Because it represents a redemption of kavitsa v'diluk, jumping, acceleration, taking us to a place where we haven't yet earned. Just bringing us up to the top of the mountain by the express route. Right? Like if you go to Masada, right? You, instead of climbing to the top, you take the cable car, right? Pesach is that cable car. Now here's the thing. There's a beautiful thought from Rav Nachman of Breslov who raises this question. I think we've mentioned this before. He says, how come when a person first comes to Yiddishkeit, a person becomes a Baal Tshuva, there is so much excitement, there's so much passion, there's so much interest, everything is wonderful, every davening is wonderful, every Shabbos is wonderful, every Yom Tov is wonderful. And then, as a person gets used to things, some of the excitement wears off. You get into a rut, things become a burden, things become a drag. And a person asks themselves, am I losing ground? I mean, the more I do these things, the less they move me, the less I become influenced, the less I become elevated. What happened to all the progress that I made? Am I losing it? And Rav Nachman says a beautiful, beautiful mashal. He says, let's take the mashal of a baby that's learning to walk. and the parents hold on to the child, and the child takes those steps, you know, to side by side, and everything is great. And then there comes a day where the parents feel that the child is now capable of walking on his own, and the parents let go. And what's normally going to happen is plop, plop, it's going to hit, fall down, and get up again, and fall down. By the way, that's a great mussar. Watching a child walk is one of the great, great mussar of life. Because no matter how many times the child falls, he or she will get up and keep walking. And the Bidichava used to say, we got to learn from a child, no matter how many times you fall, you get up again and keep going. That child never gives up. And that's a great mussar for how one looks at life all the time. But if the child could articulate his thoughts at that moment, he might be thinking, in frustration, why was it so easy a few minutes ago? I thought I really mastered this walking thing. And now all I'm doing is falling. Am I regressing? Right? The 10-month-old, am I losing it? And Rav Nachman says the answer is exactly the opposite. When it seemed so easy to be done, that was because your parent was holding you up. And ironically, precisely because the parent now has confidence in you, that you're strong enough to be able to do it yourself, the parent lets go. So Rav Nachman says, when a person feels obstacles in Avodas Hashem, that is a good sign, not a bad sign. Because sometimes, when a person is so far from the Ribono Shel Olam, they would have no way of connecting to Him. Hashem grabs them by the lapels and pulls them up, and carries them. Well, v'shteitzach, if Hashem is carrying you through everything, Ruchnius is going to look very easy. The mitzvahs are so wonderful. Shabbos is great and Pesach is great. But at some point, when a person is strong enough inside to be able, as it were, to make the mitzvahs their own accomplishments, Hashem lets go. Now, like a parent, just like the parent is always watching the child, Hashem doesn't, chas v'shalom, leave the scene. But Hashem lets go so the person makes it their own. So Rav Nachman says, this is an important thought to keep in mind, that when a person has difficulties in Avodas Hashem, that is not a sign of failure. That is a sign that Hashem has confidence in them, that they are able to take the gifts that the Eibishter gave them and make them their own gift, make them their own accomplishment, by their struggle and by their work. Because the real greatness of a human being is not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them, but it's by what they do with what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them. And sometimes in life, Hashem gives us artificial highs, but then He says, make it your own. We find the Vilna Gaon, for example. Imagine this. Malachim used to come to the Vilna Gaon at night, and they would beg him, let me teach you this part of the Torah, the deepest secrets. And he would turn it down. He says he only wants what he gains from his effort. He doesn't want what's handed to him on a silver platter. Because the only thing that counts is what we struggle to achieve. This is what Rav Nachman of Breslov says, and as I say, the same ideas in the Vilna Gaon. In this sense, let's now look at Pesach and Shavuos. Pesach is the redemption of an artificial high. Hashem took us to a great place that we had not yet earned. We had not yet deserved it. It was too early. We were not ready. But what did Hashem do? Hashem showed us a vista of what we are capable of becoming. Pesach is the vision of what we might become. But right after Pesach, Hashem takes us off the mountain, puts us down on the ground, and says, now that you know what you're able to be, climb the mountain and become it. So in effect, therefore, the shaychus between Pesach and Shavuos is, Pesach, through its liberation that we talked about, gives me a momentary view of what it's like to be free.
But that doesn't last. That is Hashem putting us on a place that we haven't yet earned by all of our work. And the Omer is then to internalize the Cheiros of Pesach by the effort that we put in. That's why it says Pesach has a Seder. Because what is a Seder? A Seder is a pre-programmed thing that you do. Hashem tells you exactly what to do. Hashem says, connect the dots. Shavuos, there's no Seder. Because now Hashem says, I've drawn you the picture. Now I want you to make your own picture based on what I've taught you. That's why also Pesach doesn't have bread, okay? But Shavuos has bread, chametz. And chametz is reminiscent of the pasuk in Bereishis, "Bezeyah sapecha tochal lechem." Bread is the sweat of your brow. You see, so in this sense, Pesach is the Shabbos, Pesach is the gift, and Shavuos is the effort. And maybe that's why, on a deeper level, Pesach is the day after Shabbos. I'm sorry, Omer is the day after Shabbos. Because Shabbos is the gift. But then there's a day after where you got to start from the bottom, the bottom again. You see, but this is so important because unless we had the vision of what we could become, we would never start up that path because we would never believe that we could achieve these madrigas. But Hashem shows you, it's a window into your soul in an ideal sense. Again, we're not always zochet to experience Yom Tov this way. But for the moments that we experience them, it's, you know, they even say, you know, I once read a very, very beautiful description about this with children sometimes. This was a book on special education. And it talked about, you know, children with all these learning disabilities and frustrations and psychological problems, etc. And the author, was not a Jewish book, the author talked about the fact that there are moments, maybe once a month or maybe once a year, where there's like a window that opens up and you see what the person really is. And then you know that there's something here that is reachable. Most of the time it's covered up, but there's a window that sometimes opens up. Pesach is that window that opens up. So we know it's there, but then it gets closed. The parent lets go. And then we have to try to earn it, right? And that's the godless of a choice. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I don't know if this is exactly what it is.
Yeah.
But someone told me about people who, like, if someone cares about where they are at a certain point or a certain stage, that it can be compared to the chart of a heart. You know, if it goes up and down, so that's a good sign. They're a vital sign. The person is living and things are normal.
Sure. Very good. So you need for it to go down to go up. That's very good. And that's there's even a lashon in Chazal for this. The phrase is Yurida Shehi Letzorech Aliyah. That, let's say you're climbing on a ladder. So when you have to lift yourself up to the next rung, your foot will have to press down. You'll have to put your weight down on the other rung. So in effect, you're moving yourself down as the process of going up. And that's right, you know, the old saying, what we are is what Hashem gave us, and what we do with it is what we give back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, Pesach is what Hashem gives us, and that's why it's like Shabbos. Svira and Shavuos is what we give back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, that's the yesod of Mimacharas of Shabbos. Shabbos is great, but what do you do after Shabbos? What do you take from Shabbos? Right? Shabbos Hashem gives us so much, but then we have to take it into the next realm of the work week. And it's been, in fact, this is actually the simple meaning of why, you know, Chazal have the famous lashon: if all the Jewish people would keep two Shabboses, there would be Geula right away. Two Shabboses. And even though Mordechai Ben David sings just one Shabbos, but he himself gave a hesber. He says that the Talmud Yerushalmi says the Jewish people only have to keep one Shabbos, and since he wrote the song in Eretz Yisrael, he followed the Talmud Yerushalmi. But the Bavli says you got to keep two Shabboses. What's the mila of two Shabboses? The answer is very pashut. I keep one Shabbos, but then we need a whole week that has been elevated by the holiness of that Shabbos. So if I just started keeping Shabbos, my preceding week has not been elevated by the last Shabbos. So we need Shabbos to extend its Kedusha into a week, and then we need one Shabbos that in turn has been elevated by a whole week. So you really need the first Shabbos. It's really the second Shabbos that gives you the redemption. But you need a Shabbos that has been elevated by a week. But you need a week that has been elevated by a Shabbos. Therefore, you need that first Shabbos to elevate the week, and then you have a second Shabbos that comes, right? So the point basically is that Geula comes not by virtue of what Hashem gives us, but by virtue of what we do and transform what Hashem gave and gives us. Hashem gives us the Shabbos. We transform even the week.
I understand that, you know, we have to keep to Shalasim, but it's almost impossible that the entire world can keep to Shalasim.
Yeah.
What does that really mean when it says keep to
Shalasim? Well, that's what it means. In other words, basically, it doesn't say Mashiach will only come if we keep two Shabbos. Mashiach will come because there's a Zman. But it means if we wanted to bring Mashiach next Sunday, if all the Jews were to keep Shabbos, we would bring him Sunday. Now, you're right. As if you're asking me, will that... Is that the way Mashiach will probably come? The answer is probably not. But you know, I don't want to rule it out. I don't want to rule it out because we should never rule anything out. But Baruch Hashem, it doesn't say Mashiach will only come if the Jewish people keep two Shabbos. It doesn't say it that way. But that is a way that Mashiach could come this Sunday. Well, actually, not this Sunday. It would have to be two Sundays. You have to have two Shabbos, unless the Yerushalmi is right. We'll have to see. That'll be another Shaila. Who do we pass him like? Yeah.
I don't know the source, but I'm reading that the two Shabboses, another idea was that one was the Shabbos of thought and the Shabbos of deed,
uh-huh.
And that one is the Shabbos that we keep, and the second one could be the Shabbos Ramallah.
Ah, so you're saying that's right. So there's only one Shabbos, but
what we have to do in the second Shabbos is the one that we create. That's,
mm-hmm.
You know, it fits.
I see. Okay, well that would reconcile. So all we need is one Shabbos. Right, right. Now again, it's also true that in Shabbos there are two commandments, Zachor and Shamor. So let's say you were to sleep all day. You would have fulfilled the mitzvah of not doing work on Shabbos. You didn't do any work. Sleeping is not work, but you have not observed the other. So even within Shabbos there are two aspects that you have to keep. But this is the idea of what Sfiras Omer represents. Sfiras Omer is the all-important idea of taking the gifts that Hashem gives us and turning them into something that is our own. And this is an important situation because the thing that Hashem is machshiv is what we do with our kochos. Meaning to say, let's say you can have two people, one person might be much brighter than the other person, etc. And as a result, they could learn much more. But if it comes easy to them and they don't fulfill, they don't use their talents with the same work and the same effort, then in terms of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you can have two people. One person could, let's say, one person could finish Shas every day. And he only finishes half of Shas a day. He takes it easy. And another person struggles to do very little. HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at the person who struggles in a much greater light. And that's an important to say. And that is the Maila of Sfiras Omer. So, Mitzvah Shem, we will continue next week. And you should have a good week and a good Shabbos.